From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Duke University has made an effort to address criticism that it was too slow to respond to allegations of rape by members of its men's lacrosse team. On Wednesday of this week, Duke President Richard Broadhead announced that he's formed several panels to investigate Duke's response to the scandal as well as student behavior on and off campus. Joining me now are leaders of three of those committees. Robert Thompson is Vice Provost for Undergraduate Education and the Dean of Trinity College at Duke University. He's chairing the Campus Culture Initiative, which will examine how Duke educates its students about personal responsibility. Robert Thompson, welcome to the program.
Pleased to be with you.
Prasad Kasibatla is an associate professor at Duke's Nichols School of the Environment. He chairs the committee investigating the student judicial process and practices. Prasad, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
James Coleman, a law professor at Duke. He'll head the committee investigating the behavior of the men's lacrosse team. And James Coleman, thanks for being with us.
I'm also glad to be here.
May I start with you and ask, you're going to be looking at the culture of the men's lacrosse team. How do you plan to do that?
Well, I guess that's a shorthand way of saying what we're going to do. We're really looking at the behavior of the members of the team over the last 5 years. And we are trying to determine a number of things, including whether the behavior was aberrant in some way in terms of the number of incidents, the seriousness of the incidents. We're also interested in looking at the response of the university to the conduct and whether, and there's some overlap, I think, with some of the other committees, because one of the things that I think we have to look at also is whether the system for reporting incidents is adequate.
So if you find out, for instance, City Councilman Eugene Brown said last night that for years the Duke lacrosse team has been a ticking time bomb that has not been dismantled. If you find out that he's right, is there something that Duke can do? How do you begin to address the behavior of students, particularly off campus?
Well, you know, I don't want to presume what we might find. I think it's especially important in these circumstances to first find the facts. And then once we find the facts, we know what we're working with, and we can determine if there is some appropriate way to address what we find. I don't think it's helpful to speculate about what we might find, and then if we find that, what we might do.
Well, Robert Thompson, you've been given a broad directive to study how Duke educates its students in personal values. Is that something that's the university's responsibility?
Yes, I think it is, and it fits in within the larger context of what are a range of values that we desire and expect our students to acquire during their undergraduate years. So I think it is very appropriate for us as educators who are committed to development broadly, both intellectual and in terms of interpersonal development, to be addressing these questions.
How does the university do that now? How does it inculcate values?
Well, one of the things that has been important in our campus has been the way in which we've tried to bring into the curriculum the types of engagements that we think are essential to help students develop the skills that they will need to function after they graduate. So we've been through a period of time here when we thought very carefully about our curriculum, and we have devised engagements that we expect all students to have. And some of these engagements are in the area of ethical inquiry. And I think that's a strong foundation for us to build on as we redouble our efforts to make that a really important engagement that our students have during their time here.
Prasad Kasibatla, you will be examining student behavior and particularly how the student body handles it through its student judicial system. How does it work now?
Well, right now, the issues related to violations of Duke's community standard are handled through the Office of Student Affairs. There's an Office of Judicial Affairs, and once complaints are referred to them, they have a process by which they go through and where they can then sanction students. So there's a wide range of sanctions that students can face, but it goes through the Office of Student Affairs.
Does Duke have an honor system?
Yes, Duke has something called the Duke Community Standard, And the community standard lays out the expectations that Duke has of its students, whether they're on campus or off campus.
Is the student system, the student judicial system, very active? Do they hear many cases?
Yeah, I think, for example, I think last year there were over 100 cases that were heard for from the off-campus part. And the on-campus includes both non-academic behavior as well as academic behavior. I don't have all the statistics here.
Right.
But, for example, in fall 2005, there were about 201 cases that came before the judicial office for off-campus non-academic behavior.
Robert Thompson, you've been on campus since 1975. How has student behavior changed over that time, would you say?
Well, I think the student behavior reflects and represents issues that are in our larger culture at any point in time. So I think over that period of time, we've seen changes along many dimensions. We've seen changes in what's expected of students and how they're prepared and what it is that we're trying to prepare them for. And I think there are many challenges for us to engage in this process. There are challenges about what are the skills that students need to navigate the challenges that are in front of them. Some of these skills are intellectual. Some of them have to do with dispositions and understandings. And I think in terms of current challenges, in particular, how it is that we have respect for individual difference.
James Coleman, I'm just trying to imagine how any changes that you all might recommend at the end of this process could actually be put into effect. Now, I'm sort of thinking back to maybe, in the 1950s when colleges and universities had enormous control, dorms were, segregated by gender, there was all kinds of codes, dress codes, for goodness sakes, at universities. We can't imagine going back, or I can't imagine, and I'm wondering if you do, going back to that kind of a system, not in detail, but where the university could actually have so much control and authority over the personal behavior of college students.
No, I mean, I don't think that anything will come out of the committee that suggests that we try to turn back the clock. I think that instead, what's important here is to make sure that our students act responsibly. I think responsibility really is the key, and that's what my committee will be looking at. Are they acting responsibly? And how do we ensure that they act responsibly?
Well, and that is the question. Can you do that without imposing some kind of guidelines, call them rules, that, as you suggest, may end up feeling like you're turning back the clock?
Well, but I don't think that it's a matter of turning back the clock. I mean, it certainly may require some cultural changes, and I don't think it happens in a vacuum. That's why I think that what I said, that there was some overlap among the various committees that have been established, and I think that's true. There's a larger culture in which this occurs, and I think that larger culture has to be consistent with what it is that we're trying to accomplish. And I think that the athletic program has to also be fully attuned to that larger culture.
I'd like to add to that, if I could, Frank. I think it's not so much a situation of turning back the clock, but rather, how do we formulate a sense of values that will serve to guide behavior of our students given the challenges that are confronting them today? And that's why I go to this fundamental aspect of respect for individual differences. And we really have to help our students develop the types of ways of thinking and discernments to move beyond just tolerance for difference to a real affirmation of the ways in which we all grow and benefit from diversity and how we must manage the increasing diversity that exists in our society.
Does this take the form of mandatory courses, mandatory workshops?
I think that's a very good question. And our experience and history at Duke has been to try to think more carefully about what are the skills that we would like the students to develop and think about the multiple ways in which they can do that. So we tend to think about engagements, for example, rather than one particular required course. So that was reflected in our curriculum. We wanted our students to be familiar with ethical systems of reasoning. And rather than mandating one particular course, what we said was that in order to complete requirements for the degree, you had to engage two courses that had this as a fundamental issue of the course.
Prasad Kasabatla, do you think students can effectively police each other in, if you're talking about a change in culture?
Yes, I think so. I think, in fact, it's borne out at Duke, I think, from an academic perspective, and I'd hope it also bears out from a non-academic perspective. I just want to add to what Bob said. I think that, you know, that's exactly the way I think we should do it, but I think we will not be 100% successful, and I think what our committee is going to look at is the disciplinary process itself. And I think a key issue for us is the distinction between off-campus and on-campus behavior, and how far should the university reach off-campus, essentially.
And students, I suppose, will have a voice in that as well?
Yes, our committee includes student representatives.
This is the State of Things. We're talking today about Duke University's response to criminal allegations surrounding its men's lacrosse team with three members of Duke's faculty who are leading investigations into student behavior on culture on campus. We'll continue that conversation in a moment. A little later on, a new film documents Terry Sanford's political career, and we'll talk to the filmmaker and others who knew Terry Sanford and knew about his legacy. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is The State of Things broadcast from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Duke University has formed five committees to respond to the controversy surrounding the men's lacrosse team and allegations that a woman was raped at a teen party. We're talking today with a chairman of those three of those committees as we examine the lacrosse team's behavior and Duke University's student culture and its student judicial process. With me are Robert Thompson, Vice Provost for Undergraduate Education. He is chairing the Campus Culture Initiative. Prasad Kasabatla is an associate professor at Duke's Nichols School of Environment. He's looking into the student judicial process. James Coleman is also with us, law professor at Duke, looking into the committee that, or chair of the committee that's investigating the behavior of the men's lacrosse team. I want to put this question to all three of you, and that is, you know, the coach of the team, lacrosse team, has resigned as part of all this, and everybody from Richard Broadhead on down feels and has said that they think that's appropriate. But, you know, I've heard a few people say, why is it that only the team coach should take responsibility? What about their English teachers? What about their philosophy teachers and others? To what extent do the faculty take some responsibility in creating an environment and inculcating the values that you're talking about? And let me start with you, James.
Well, I mean, I think that all of us have a responsibility for teaching our students, and I think that part of what we teach them is values. And to the extent that, you know, that hasn't got through, then I think we're all responsible. But again, I think it's important for us to figure out what has been going on, both with the lacrosse team and then more broadly what's been going on. I don't think that it's fair to conclude that the only responsible person in this situation is the lacrosse coach because he resigned.
Robert Thompson?
Yes, I would agree with that. And I think one of the important aspects of this is to understand the complexity involved here. So there are certainly issues related to the events surrounding the lacrosse team, but also there are substantive issues in terms of the reaction on our campus and in the larger community. And I think in that sense, it's really important that we don't try to just partial out or segment responsibility. This is a something that happened to our community, and it is as a community that we need to respond. And I think this is the challenge for us and also the opportunity. It's too easy to think about race as someone else's problem or to think about self-regulation as the administration's problem. Really, we need to get into a situation in which we understand and use this as an opportunity for white students to own the issue of race, for males to own the issue of sexual assault, for faculty to own the issue of student culture, and for all of us to own the issues of holding ourselves and each other accountable for operating in accordance with our fundamental values. So I think that's what's ahead of us and our committee.
Well, Prasad Kasabatla, before I let you answer the general question, let me turn it a bit and ask how you do that. And I'm talking about in the classroom. It's one thing to say we might set up courses, we may have workshops, but if I'm teaching English, you know, how do I inculcate values? How do I promote a certain set of values? Is that my responsibility, you know, sort of in every class? And does Duke and do other universities try to figure out ways in which that comes across, even in the sort of everyday teaching for professors?
You know, I can answer that in part. I think that is one of the expectations that we have of the educational process. Not that each and every course will address each and every issue, but to think about, while doing one aspect of a course, what are the other aspects that one could attend to that really do reflect institutional commitments and values. And I think that is something that happens, and this is an opportunity to reinforce that approach.
And I think we do that in some sense in every course, even if the subject matter is different, in the sense that we talk about how to, for example, give credit to others for work that others did. We talk about we make sure there's fairness in the classroom. We make sure that everyone's views are heard and respected, and the dialogue is constructive. So I think we do that on an everyday basis in the classroom. In terms of your previous question, I think I want to point out, I think that dialogue in terms of the faculty's responsibilities and the faculty's role in all this has already started. The faculty meeting last week with President Broadhead, I think this very issue was brought up. You know, to what extent should faculty start thinking about how they themselves communicate these values to these students? Bob Thompson sent a letter to the faculty talking about this too. So I think that dialogue has already started at Duke.
We can't assume that Duke is the only university that has this kind of a problem. Perhaps this is the most dramatic reflection of it. But are there other models? Have other universities broken ground in terms of trying to put all these things together?
Well, I do think that one of the advantages of the academic community is that we do share experiences as well as challenges. So I think around the country you see approaches that have been crafted to the particular historical situations and current cultures on campus. So certainly there are opportunities to learn about what has been effective in the co-curricular world as well as in the curricular world. And you can be assured that, you know, that's an ongoing process that would just be intensified as we understand how we want to go forward.
You know, I agree with that. I mean, I think that we certainly want to see if there are other universities that have addressed some of these issues. But it really comes down to the unique situations here and at other universities. And so it's not going to be easy to find a solution by looking at what others have done. I think that it's really important for us to sort of figure out what the factors are here that contribute to some of the problems that we're trying to address, and then to figure out, based on that, how do we move forward.
James Coleman, you're looking into the behavior of the men's lacrosse team, and I wonder to what extent you think the NCAA itself should play a part in this. Should they be watching what you're doing, and do they offer any models for you as you examine the problem?
I don't know that this is something that the NC2A ordinarily gets involved in. I think that they probably think that these are matters that ought to be handled by the universities. But I think that to the extent that what we are finding is that athletes are operating under their own rules and that they're not being integrated well into the larger community, then I think that should be a concern, not just at Duke, but at all of the universities, particularly all of the elite universities like Duke, which pride themselves in the values that they stand for.
Well, given how competitive the Division I is, if Duke comes up with a plan and comes up with a more restrictive set of policies that in some ways reflect the values of the university and the rest of the system doesn't, does that become difficult, if not impossible, for Duke to adhere to?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you say restrictive. I don't think that's what that's where we're headed. I think that what we're really trying to do is to provide the circumstances in which students will self-regulate and in which, you know, they will respect themselves and respect others. I don't think that necessarily means more restrictions. It's simply a matter of using the freedom that they have more responsibly.
Prasad Kasabatla, have you talked with students? Have they offered to help? Are students really energized about the possibility of participating in this?
Yeah, actually, right after the committees were announced, I think I got two emails from students within 5 minutes or so. One of them works on the Honor Council, and another one works with one of the large student organizations on campus, and both of them offered to help in any way. So I think there definitely will be those. I think for us, the trick is to figure out how to get student input efficiently.
All right.
Yeah, I could echo that. I have just been flooded by responses by faculty and staff and alumni and students and community folks about how it is that they want to contribute and how they could be helpful.
And we expect to hear from you in a final report, I guess, May 1st. Am I right?
Right, but I think that May 1st report will probably be just the start of the process.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you all for joining us today. We look forward to hearing back from you when you've completed your work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much to Prasad Kasabatla, Associate Professor of the Nichols School of Environment, Robert Thompson, Vice Provost for Undergraduate Education and Dean of Trinity College, and James Coleman, Professor of Law. Up next, Terry Sanford and his role in Southern progressive politics. Stay with us.